So I'm here with Brendan Dawes at Flash on the Beach in Brighton, and we've just seen a whole bunch of fantastic speakers actually over the last couple of days. And Brendan, you might know from his book Analog In, Digital Out. So we've both been kind of thinking and talking quite a lot about the stuff we've seen. So what have your impressions been or highlights been so far?
The session we've just been in, Robert Hodgkin, is just jaw-dropping stuff, because it's the thing that struck me was there's one thing we're doing generative code stuff, I think you were saying the same, is that you know, a lot of it can look the same, or it can lack a sort of creative aesthetic where it's so random that it doesn't seem to be any sort of conceptual thought into it. Yeah, but Robert's stuff was, you know, it almost had a narrative, and I was speaking to him afterwards. I said, how did it, you know, this piece, when it was ending, it was a music piece, and it seemed to go into a fireball at the end. And I said, you know, did you plan? He said, totally random. He says that it could have gone into a load of spheres, but for some reason, it ended up like that. So it looked like it was a natural ending to this piece. So I thought that was just absolutely amazing, and just so beautiful to look at as well.
It was really mesmerizing.
Yeah. So that's been a highlight for me, and Joshua's talk was very good. I suppose the real thing for me and why I come to these things is the whole community and the vibe of it's just really alive. And I think for me, you get the spirit of John Davey is, you know, when you meet John, you understand why this conference is as it is. You know, he's now doing evening sessions, and he's, you know, he looks after all the speakers and all, and he, you know, and everyone gets looked after, whether an attendee or not, and he just knows what people want from a good conference. And the first year was great. This year so far has been even better. Like 815 attendees, last year was 500 and something. So it's really growing, and I just think everyone I speak to about it is just think there's a fantastic vibe to it all.
It's definitely a really different vibe to some of the things I went to a few years ago, which were, I think everyone had kind of been through the dot-com crash.
Yeah.
They were kind of all a bit burnt out. A lot of people starting to work in, you know, in other, completely other areas. There's that whole explosion of designers doing vinyl toys and stuff.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people had just lost a load of work. They'd worked for companies that didn't exist anymore and all of that stuff, and just had it, their sort of head full of it. And now we're kind of seeing, you know, Flash has developed into this incredible thing now. And it's a bit funny to have I always find it a bit strange to have a conference about a tool, really. You know, it's like pencil on the beach or paintbrush on the beach.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's interesting to see, we were talking earlier about how Adobe have kind of shifted what they're doing with Flash, and it's become this really sort of powerful thing.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time, there's been this really nice balance of other people doing kind of completely different stuff.
Well, I think that's, you know, one of the things that jumped out at me when I was looking through the sessions, and your session included, was how many people mentioned the word play.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's at least four. And yet, Adobe, you know, seem to be, the enterprise level is where the money's at, they're making applications and all this thing, which is fine, but there also seems to be this other group of people who are getting back to playing with stuff. And I suppose it's one of the fears that when I talk to people is all this, you know, ActionScript 3, which is, you know, fantastic. When you start to use it, you realise, God, this is so much nicer than AS2, for instance. But also the things you have to learn in order to just get started is it's just a steeper learning curve. So I'm slightly worried about that, because the way I work and probably the way you work as well is just getting things down, you know, and I heard Oral Balkan say today, he said, you know, just get stuff down and then recode it later so it looks nice, but you're just trying to get your thoughts down, sort of a proof of concepts. And I don't want people to, you know,
stop playing
because, and also people who haven't even programmed before, I don't want them to lose, you know, they might open AS3 up and go, how am I going to get started in that? I don't want people to lose that spirit of just having a go.
I think that, I mean, that was the really you know, that was the revolutionary thing for us at Antirom, really. It was a bunch of people who didn't, who weren't programmers,
yeah.
could make interactive stuff, could yeah. program stuff, basically. And I've just been going through some old code in order to show some stuff today, and it's awful. I mean, looking yeah. at it, it's really kind of hacked about. It's, yeah. it's structured in sort of terrible ways. But the thing was twofold. One was, I just want to see if I can make this happen.
Yeah.
And then the second one is, oh, I've worked out how to, I don't know, make a sprite spin around. What can I do with that? Because that's
yeah.
the only thing I know.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the flip side. And I kind of would be interested to see whether I'd overtake much attention, actually, pay much attention to what people have been saying. I think
yeah.
Craig said it as well.
Yeah, Craig said it as well, yeah.
You know, don't lose that sort of whole edge of just messing about with
yeah.
stuff and trying things out.
I think John made an interesting point, because I said one of the things is, you know, I think a few people have said, well, one person at least has said that some of the speakers aren't talking about Flash, which is true, but they're very inspirational all the same. And a lot of the guys, like, you know, Robert started in Flash. Now he does everything in processing, but he started out in that, and John made an interesting point that he thinks Flash is about an approach.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he'd probably carry on calling it Flash on the Beach,
yeah,
but
yeah.
you don't necessarily have to have people who just use Flash or may never use Flash. But I think that approach is, I mean, that's why Flash, is the community, has grown up so quickly in a relatively short space of time, because this spirit of sharing and
I think it's also
throwing
been,
stuff around.
You know, that Flash hit the web and was small enough to go around, you to pass files around, you know, on dial-up
yeah.
connections and stuff. And I think, you know, so if it was a director, kind of missed out on that bug
yeah.
really massively. But it, I mean, I remember the early sort of multimedia days that people were sharing files quite
yeah.
a lot, or sharing code at least quite
yeah.
a lot on online, on bulletin boards and stuff. And then Flash made it really easy to do that. You could send someone the file and say, here, you know, have
yeah.
a go with this. And it just, it was sort of a bit of time and place, I think,
yeah.
in that respect.
Yeah.
You know, and people like Josh Davis actually
yeah.
really sort of put all of his work online, put
yeah.
all of his source code
yeah.
online. And then there was a kind of lockdown in, again, sort of dot-com boom, where everyone's under NDAs, no one
yeah.
could kind of talk about anything. And a lot of that vibe really got sucked out of it. And I think, as you say, you know, John Davies organised Flash on the Beach has really brought that kind of sharing, the kind
yeah.
of pub talk, if you like, or the
yeah,
sort of bar
yeah.
talk, yeah, and put it centre stage.
Yeah.
Your talk was about if it works, break it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were really kind of talking about, you railed against this idea of the default, and so
yeah,
you had
yeah.
to really kind of move away from
yeah.
the default. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, of what the
yeah,
thinking was,
I suppose,
behind it?
I suppose I get a little bit frustrated with some of the you know, the web starting to look the same in certain sections. So this whole web 2.0 thing is, I just don't, while I understand the philosophy behind it, I think it's an interesting thing, because you need web 2.0 and it describes something so you can talk about it like we are now, so that has a purpose to name things, but I never understand why they have to look the same. So you know, you go to lots of web 2.0 companies and they've all got very similar logos, and they've got similar websites, and the font size is the same, and all this kind of stuff, and it just drives me insane. So, and I think, you know, things like, and WordPress, I love, I think it's fantastic, and systems like that, but obviously it's you can get your stuff up there very quickly, and if you just want to get content up there, it's really great. And you know, my brother-in-law, who isn't a coder, you know, he's got his own blog and he knows how to tinker about with it. It's fantastic. But I think for us as designers, it's also, you know, okay, there's things we can do beyond that. We can take this database and display it in a myriad of ways. I'd like to see more people exploring that. And also, I get, you know, things like, I'll let you talk about Second Life, but you know, all those kind of things of like, you know, virtual worlds, which we saw like, you know, 10 years ago, and they didn't work then, and I don't believe they work now. And I think it's just laziness to go to sort of use something that works in the real world exactly and just transfer that in a very literal sense digitally, because we don't have 3D control devices for one on a computer and all these kind of things. So so I'm just trying to, what I'd like to do is sort of similar to what Hillman was saying in his session, was, you know, asking more questions than providing answers. That's what I'm interested in, is even annoying people a little bit and go, yeah, a block, you know, it's in the kind of thing, you know, and it's nothing, it's not a new idea or anything. You know, David Carson, when he did an article for Raygun that was all dingbat font, you couldn't read it. And it wasn't reprinted in a way that you could read it. He just went, yeah, whatever. So I kind of, you know, obviously it's completely useless as a, you know, trying to read an article, but I understand why people like that do these things to sort of jolt you out of your comfort zone. Because I think when you get too comfortable, and Robert was saying the same thing tonight, is you just get too comfortable and stuff, because you do what you know. And a lot of people do that because it's easy and it pays the wages. And
obviously, if there's a deadline pressing,
yeah, exactly.
You fall back,
yeah,
on your tricks or what the software does,
yeah,
easily, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm still using stuff that I learned in Photoshop 3. I'm sure there's about a billion ways to do something better than, you know, so stuff like that. But again, sometimes you don't get time to learn this stuff.
And I get it with my students as, yeah, well. I show them something and they go, and the next week they go, oh, but you know you can do it like this? No, I didn't. I've been spending half a day doing that.
Yeah. So I'm always interested in learning new things all the time. So, you know, and that can be anything, or reading something or trying a new technique or something.
I mean, I think I see one of the things that's going on a lot is, you know, is the body as an interface. That this idea of really just getting rid of all the clutter, and, you,
yeah,
know, computers, a whole lot of things have happened, sort of converged, that computers got fast enough to do really good camera tracking, and, you know, decent video in, but, you know, audio reactive stuff's been around for quite a long time. And then you've got things like the Wii controller, which is,
yeah,
and the Arduino boards and all of that,
yeah,
that have made it really easy for people to sort of get physical,
yeah,
with the computer. And for me, I guess interactive media has always been about plugging one thing into another thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's really all you're ever doing, is plugging one thing into another thing to change the value of its properties. And so now we're kind of seeing a whole load of people doing kind of camera interactive stuff. You know, I've really enjoyed G-Cut's mix. But can you just describe that for people? You know, no one saw it
you
did with him.
We didn't invent the technology. That technology's been around for ages.
There's
a site called, yeah, Miss Pinky.
Miss Pinky, that's right.
So I think it's MissPinky.com. And,
that's right.
And you can buy this vinyl, like one's pink, one's black, and essentially it's time code, like similar to Simpty time code stamped on a vinyl. If people are familiar with Final Scratch and Serato's, I think, the leading one now. Similar technology to that. So you can buy this, and I think it's like $60. And basically, if you use something like Max MSP, they give you some building blocks, then go away and build some software.
It reads the audio
just through the mixer. That goes straight into the audio input on your computer, and that gives you, with those numbers, it's an audio feed, so then translates those numbers into velocity, speed, you know, direction, backwards and forwards. So, and then you can, you know, you can control anything you want. It's a control device, like it's like a big control knob or something, but it happens to be vinyl. And so we were funded by FACT in Liverpool, which is the Foundation for Arts and Creative Technologies, which is a great place, and they fund so many projects a year. And we got on one of these to explore this vinyl technology. And I think it's one of the main points I always make, is that it's no good, you know, me writing something and then me moving the record back and forwards. It looked rubbish, you know, which I demonstrated, you know, last night. I was rubbish. But when you put it in the hands of a real practitioner who knows how to really hammer it and put it through its paces, that's when it becomes interesting. So that's why we got, we hooked up with G-Cut, and we worked on this project together at Magnetic North and G-Cut, and just explored it. And we used video because it's a very visual thing. And when we were going to perform it was all leading to a performance in Liverpool, and we wanted something very visual. Now, video is sort of the obvious, that is kind of the default one to do, because it's obvious and it's very, it's, everyone gets it and they can see what's going on. But I think, you know, we were talking this morning over breakfast about, you know, where can we take it? And you could scratch any kind of information from databases to whatever. But we're saying, could you, you know, and this would definitely be feasible, record, make a printout of a DJ's performance. So it would create art on the fly and create a print in some way. Or so that could be like, well, that was my performance for my, you know, set. So those kind of things we'd like to explore, you know, a lot more. But again, it's time.
And you could record the time code, yeah, presumably as well, and record
exactly
record his sort of scratching around on the time code.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And replay it.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, and play it back. So I just think it's a really interesting technology, and I love, you know, you talk about the Wii, and it for me, they sort of remove the computer from it, the scary keyboard and the mouse, and anyone can move a record backwards and forwards, or, you know, pick the needle up and put it somewhere else. It's fantastic. They don't need instructions. And that's what I love, you know, similarly about the Wii. You know, my wife now plays video games. My sister-in-law plays video games.
It's been a huge hit in old people's homes.
Yeah,
as well,
yeah, that's
it?
Right. And I love that, breaking those barriers down, because this technology, you know, it's great when it just goes to mass audience like that.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it feels like on one side, you know, obviously, you know, Adobe want to develop a new product, and it's the whole life cycle of software is to add new stuff, and because that's the only way you can set up. Well, that's at least how it's marketed. And we were talking about processing, which is open source, and it doesn't have any features. It has new libraries that get released for it, but the actual thing itself is just kind of stop, play, open, save, and that's it. And so in a way, you know, that's sort of building up one set of complexity and building up one sort of barrier. And at the same time, people like you and Craig and we're sort of trying to pull them down as well and saying, oh, no, it doesn't have to be that more complicated. In the middle are clients, really. And I heard, I sat behind some people today, actually, who were discussing, I think, Craig's talk, actually, and saying, yeah, that's really interesting, but, you know...
how do you get paid?
Yeah, but you know, for a proper job, you wouldn't really be able to do any of that. Or for a client job, you wouldn't really be able to do any of that. You know, you couldn't really use those techniques. No one has cameras. No, you can't rely on many users kind of having cameras on their computer.
Yeah.
And it struck me, I just thought, you know, that's missed the whole point, really, of what he was saying. How does your playing around, your messing around, scratching around in code and with all sorts of other stuff feed into your role as creative director at Magnetic?
Well, the clients love the sexiness. You know, you've got to think that, you know, that they're doing their job day to day, and they go through what they do to do their job. And then when they see, like, suddenly Play-Doh controlling something, particularly, you know, for clients like the BBC or, you know, they suddenly go, oh, right, I didn't know you did that kind of stuff, and, right, we need to talk. And you might end up doing something that's got nothing to do with it, but what you're trying to communicate is an ideology and an approach, like Anti-Rom did, you know. It's, you're trying to say, this is our philosophy, this is why we do our stuff, and we can do stuff like that for clients. So, and it can be really, sometimes you think, oh, some clients can be very straight, and then they love, you know, all this kind of crazy stuff, because they realise that you're going to bring into it just an alternative way of thinking that's then reined back to work for them. You don't, you know, make a Play-Doh interface for the e-commerce site. Obviously, that's ridiculous, but... you might think about a problem in a different way and then create a different solution. And also, it's a great story. You know, clients like, you know, the whole, that the swans on a train thing in the book is, you know, where I was left like these origami swans on this train by a random stranger. It's like, I've had clients, you know, tell me, oh, I tell that one all the time at dinner parties. And, you know, and at first glance, what the hell has that got to do with interactive stuff, and you know, it says a lot about editing and being aware of stuff. So all these things feed into the process. So it is all relevant, you know. And I was asked the same question, you know, when I was in San Francisco the other week, and someone said, you know, how do you make money though? Because I generally don't show the work, because the work's out there and people can go and see that. I try and show some of the behind the scenes stuff or some of the approaches or the experiments. And you know, it's just that, well, this is, we're trying to communicate an approach here. That's all we're trying to do.
I think it can go, you know, really both ways. Yeah. You know, we used to have this at Antirom, and particularly with Levi's, who at the time were very, very open to us doing kind of what we wanted. And, you know, one of the things is you can't imagine what you've never known.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's really hard sometimes for clients. So I mean, I always, someone once said to me something really wise. It was the creative director actually at Animal Logic. He said, you know, when young designers talk about, you know, firing their clients and the clients not getting it, or re-educating their clients, or just how arrogant that is, because those clients know their businesses really well.
Yeah, of course
well.
They do.
He said, you know, in the same way as if someone put you in a trading floor, you know, of a bank, when someone's come in from a completely different background into a studio where people are playing music and all kind of, you know, table tennis and all that, that, you know, you can, it's, it can be really daunting, and you don't want to seem like an idiot.
Yeah.
So of course you're going to say, well, I saw this thing online and I really liked it, and sort of come with some informed opinion. And I think a lot of the time it's about trying to sort of break down those barriers as well and say, well, yeah, you know, we could do that, but let me show you a whole lot of stuff that you might just be interested to kind of play around with. And then I think once you show that experimental stuff, then a client can go, oh, right, I can get what you're talking about now.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the things that Tomato do really well, where often clients come to them and say, we really like what you did for, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
Could you do that for us?
Yeah.
And they just never really do that. They say, here's what we're working on at the moment. You can have some of this.
Yeah.
Of course, now they're in a bit of a kind of more luxurious position where they can do that more easily, but they've always done that, I think. And not that they've never bent their kind of, you know, had their will sort of dented or bent a bit towards a brand and stuff. I think they've always respected that kind of balance between the two. But I think there's always been that idea that, you know, it can be a really two-way process. A client gives you a whole load of limitations and restrictions, which you can really work, you can either find really frustrating.
Yeah.
Well, or you can think that's a starting
point. Yeah, no, I'm always a fan of limitations, constraints, however you want to call it, because I think when you have too much freedom, then it's, you know, that's generally a bad thing. And so, yeah, I'm a real fan of constraints. And then, you know, we've both grown up in, you know, the constraints of the web and multimedia, and from the power of computers to how it was back then, to, you know, how little RAM we had to program in, and all these kind of things, and even though now, you know, you seem to have more freedom, but there's always constraints. You know, even now I can kill a computer with some stuff. You know, it's quite easy. It never seems to be fast enough. So I suppose I get frustrated with, like, people trying to wait for the next version. That's when they're really going to show what they can do. And it's like, never happens. You know, you've got to work with the tools that you've got at the time.
Yeah, and I think that it's also, those tools are sort of multifunctional. So you might have a Swiss Army knife of which you only use three things, and you can use them really well or something.
Yeah.
And I think the danger is, especially as a student learning stuff, is that you feel like you want to just learn it all, and that's somewhere out there lies the secret to kind of to being a flash guru or something, or processing guru. And I think what's been evident, for example, with Robert's stuff, is that he started with one little thing and just kept tweaking it and tweaking it. And he said, you know, here's my repertoire. He showed two or three things at the beginning, which was basically what he knows how to do in processing.
Yeah.
But what he's then taken those two or three things, you know, the heights he's taken them to and kind of how he's combined them together is just really astonishing.
Yeah.
You know, if you said to him, do you know much about kind of flex or something, he'd probably just go, you know.
Well, it's similar, you know, it's not similar, but, you know, DNA itself is based on four building blocks. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, and so in a way, Robert's stuff was based on four things, and the stuff was just astounding. Like I say, he just built on it and built on it, and the way he combined those different elements all the time was where it was interesting. But like I say, his four core things were just the same.
Yeah, well, Brenda and I were left thinking, well, we'll just get our coats and leave the building.
Well, I felt really old, you know, so I don't know. Yeah, it's in one way, it's like, it's so inspiring, but it's a little bit depressing and seeing a little bit. But no, I thought it was so inspirational in a lot of ways.
Well, I think it's probably a good place to wrap it up.
Yeah, definitely.
We're going to get our coats.
Yeah. We'll get our coats, definitely.
Thank you very much. Go and buy Analog In Digital Out. And your site's Brendan, just brendandawes.com.
Yeah, and madebymn.co.uk. There's a website.
And Robert's is, what's it, Robert's?
Flight404.com.
So go and check that out as well. And flashonthebeach.com.
Absolutely.
You'll find everything
there. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Andy.